Welcome to the RBC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. I'm Matthias Kleins, and today I will be talking to Dr. Harriet Syme about the management of chronic renal failure in cats. And most importantly, to celebrate our 10th podcast, we have also included a little bonus in this week's episode. For those listeners who can view video podcasts, all the clinical parameters mentioned will be included in the podcast as visual materials. Patty, you've been working with Jonathan Elliott to conduct clinical studies into chronic renal failure in cats and into the progression of the disease, and you have a fairly unique setup to do actual work with patients rather than with models of the disease. Can you tell us about how this works on a day-to-day basis?
What we do is to study cats with chronic kidney disease, which is a very common problem, particularly in the elderly cat population, is we go into first opinion clinics. In fact, we go to the first opinion clinic that's held at the Royal Veterinary College, and we go to various clinics outside of the college. What the purpose of these clinics is to see cats with naturally occurring chronic kidney disease. Now, there are people elsewhere who've been studying kidney disease in cats, but some of those studies are based on experimental models. Whilst those studies have their uses, a young cat that's had an experimentally induced kidney disease is not actually very similar to the cats that we see in our clinics that are typically elderly and also often have other problems going on. So they'll have dental disease and other issues. And so by studying these cats in the real world, if you like, we hope that we'll find out things that are more applicable than to the treatment of cats in general practice.
I guess the nice thing about it also is that whilst studying those cats, you can also help these cats.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one thing to clearly establish. I mean, what we are doing is really just recruiting these cats and then treating these cats as best practice, as far as we know, what the ideal treatment is as of today for these cats. But then looking at things to say, okay, which factors influence how well these cats are going to do. So one of the things we're particularly interested in looking at is proteinuria. That's the amount of protein that the cats leak into their urine. And this is something that we can measure relatively straightforwardly in a urine sample. And then just by the fact that we follow these cats up for a very long time, sometimes for years, we can find out whether these things are of prognostic significance. And
meaning that in the long run it'll tell you whether this cat will develop renal failure in the future.
Yes, and that's been one of the most significant findings of our investigations to date, is that a while ago, formally, before we started studying it, people, ourselves included, we thought proteinuria wasn't a problem in cats, because the amount of protein that cats leak into their urine is very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
Broadly speaking, when we talk about kidney disease, we tend to talk of glomerular disease. Now, the glomerulus is the filter that blocks proteins leaking into the urine. And if you have glomerular disease, in crude terms, that sieve becomes leaky and an awful lot of protein leaks into the urine. Now, that sort of overt glomerular disease is actually very uncommon in cats. In dogs, we will see sometimes dogs that come in that have lost so much protein into their urine that they're actually edematous and they have fluid build up under the skin.
And if you touch
their skin, it's all puffy,
mm-hmm.
and they've got swelling, or their abdomen, their belly swells up big because there's lots of fluid in the abdomen. Well, cats do that only very rarely, which resulted in people not thinking that protein was of any interest or any significance. And what we did by looking at the population of cats that we see was we measured the protein in their urine and then followed the cats over time, treating them as best we could, and found that even though the amounts of protein in the cat's urine by and large were minuscule, it was still very prognostically significant. And what I mean by that is that if, when we first saw the cats, they had more protein in the urine, say above a urine protein to creatinine ratio, which is the clinical measurement that we use for that, above 0.4, those cats, on the whole, would die much faster than those cats that had less protein in their urine.
And of course, for a clinician, that would mean that these are the cats who predominantly need the treatment. So if this would develop into a diagnostic test, we could advise veterinarians in the field to take much more intense steps in treating those animals to try and prevent this progression of the disease. Is that right?
It certainly potentially will guide our treatment. And right now, the million-dollar question in veterinary nephrology, if you like, is this protein that's in the urine, is it just a marker of a certain kidney disease that's more likely to progress rapidly?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something that if you treat the protein and you make the amount of protein in the urine less, will that actually improve
the
cat's survival? And that's something that we don't know for sure at the moment, but there are reasons to assume that reducing the amount of protein in the urine might actually be beneficial to this cat.
Just to take a step back from this, though, for people who are probably not vets and who listen to this, could you just give us a brief description what chronic renal failure in the cat is, and especially how it basically manifests from a clinical point of view? How do you determine that a cat is in chronic renal failure and therefore needs treatment?
So what we recognise as chronic renal failure in the clinical setting is probably the tip of the iceberg. But we do recognise it as a very common problem, in that we see cats that come in usually because they're drinking a lot and urinating a lot. And this is a sign that the kidneys are failing. At the end stage, the cats may well stop eating and become dehydrated and become clinically very unwell. And for most cats, but not all, there is a period of time between that end stage of becoming really unwell and developing the first sign of the problem, so drinking more and urinating more. And when a cat comes in drinking more and urinating more, perhaps having lost a little bit of weight or lost their appetite, we can diagnose chronic kidney disease at that point by doing a blood test, generally in conjunction with looking at a urine sample. And what we're looking for in that blood test is essentially that substances that should be removed by the kidney are building up in the blood system. So the clinical values that are normally looked at are creatinine and urea. And as the kidneys start to fail, those go up in the blood.
And your protein, as a predictor of how disease progresses, would probably help. And you would instill treatment, then you could probably protect the kidney by trying to prevent loss of further units of the kidney, loss of further nephrons, is that right?
We certainly hope that reducing the amount of protein in the urine might slow the progression of kidney disease. But I guess before we consider that, we have to consider how the protein gets into the urine in the first place. And there are a couple of different ways that may happen. The first is, if the glomerular barrier is more leaky, then more of the proteins will leak across it into the urine. So that's one thing. The other thing is, because the glomerulus acts as this filter, if there's an increase in pressure within the blood, an increase in hydrostatic pressure, then that is actually going to force more proteins across the barrier. So that's also something that's important. And then a third potential mechanism is something that, again, we didn't recognise until relatively recently, is that a reasonable amount of protein, even in the normal animal, probably gets across the glomerular barrier into the primary filtrate and then gets reabsorbed across the tubular cells. And if the kidney is injured and you've got less functioning tubular cells, they're going to be less able to reabsorb the protein, and so more of it is going to appear in the urine.
You mentioned hydrostatic pressure as one of the determinants how disease progresses or how it occurs in the first place. High blood pressure seems to be, to some extent, linked to renal failure in cats as well. Is that a cause or an effect? What do you as an expert think about that?
there's a great deal of interest in veterinary medicine and in human medicine about the cause-effect relationship between blood pressure and kidney disease. And it is a real chicken and egg situation. In certain circumstances, the high blood pressure can come first, and in other circumstances, at least in human medicine, the kidney disease can go first. And we certainly recognise in our feline patients that we generally see the two things together. So cats that present with high blood pressure and extremely high blood pressure, often having gone blind as a result of their high blood pressure, generally have kidney disease. But not all cats with kidney disease will have high blood pressure. Only about 20% of them have extremely elevated blood pressure.
So would that suggest that possibly high blood pressure to some extent can be the cause for kidney disease, whilst the other way around it doesn't always work out?
I don't know whether hypertension per se is a big cause of kidney disease in the cat. When we diagnose cats with hypertension, they often have kidney disease. But I personally think probably what happens is you have a cat that for some reason, perhaps its genetic makeup, perhaps something else, some sort of other environmental factor, this cat is at risk for becoming hypertensive. But then it only actually becomes hypertensive when it gets kidney disease as well. So it's a sort of double whammy.
Just multifactorial, as you could say, and it doesn't make it easy to work with the whole problem,
yes,
isn't it?
And I mean, one of the things that you have to recognise is when we talk about hypertension in cats, we're talking about the extremes of hypertension, much, much higher than would be considered to be hypertension in human medicine.
But that's a special situation in the cat, right?
Well, I think
you can't compare cats and humans.
There have been some very neat little studies done where cats, admittedly living in a research lab, but they've had blood pressure transponders put into their femoral arteries. So the cats are wandering around quite happy, not knowing that their blood pressure is being measured all the time. In fact, every 5 minutes a blood pressure measurement is being taken. And in that situation, those cats have blood pressure that is really absolutely comparable with humans. Now, what's also interesting is they took the same cats and they did an experiment, if you like, where they did a mock-up of a visit to a vet's clinic. Mm-hmm. And the person who took care of these cats every day pretended to be the cat's owners. And she put the cats in a basket and drove them around the block and then arrived at a mock-up of a vet's waiting room and sat in the vet's waiting room with a tape of a barking dog in the corner, and then went into an exam room, and the cat had a complete physical exam. And all the while, the cat's blood pressures were being measured. And what was very disturbing, and the reason that we only recognise the extremes of blood pressure in the clinic, is those cats' blood pressure could go up from up to 50 millimetres of mercury just by the stress of having the visit to the vet clinic.
So probably the biggest determinant of hypertension in cats is whether there was a dog in the waiting room or not.
Well, that's one of the things. But one of the other really depressing things about this study that shows the clinical limitations that we have to fight against every day is that you couldn't predict from the demeanour of the cats, which were the cats that had blood pressure that went up by 50 millimetres of mercury, and which were the ones that had blood pressure that was completely stable.
Some which acted wildly, still had normal blood pressures. So
you could have cats that were acting wild and trying to kill you, that their blood pressure didn't go up at all. They were externalising it, and their blood pressure was quite stable. So it's very difficult, and that's why when we, in the clinics, when we're trying to determine whether the cats are hypertensive or not, we look very closely at their retina at the back of their eye to look for hemorrhages or any other signs that say this cat is truly hypertensive.
Which at least in serious hypertension would give you a readout, I'd say.
Yes.
They have these ocular lesions, lesions at the back of the eye, right?
Yes. Although the reason that we measure their blood pressure is to catch them before that point, or at least whilst they're so minor that the cat isn't going to have lost their vision. Because if we diagnose cats with hypertension when they come in because their eyes filled up with blood, say, a condition we call hyphema, or if they've got bleeding into the back of their eye, or they've detached their retina, we can effectively treat those cats and we can bring their blood pressure down, but we're not going to give the cat the sight back.
Now that we've talked so much about the way that we possibly can diagnose renal failure in cats earlier in the future, which is the gold standard treatment you would recommend that gives a cat with chronic renal failure?
All cats with chronic renal failure, if they will eat it, should be given a diet that's restricted in phosphorus and protein, so-called renal care diets. And I mean, I think it's important to emphasise that our current studies notwithstanding and all these new avenues, we tend to sort of jump onto the bandwagon and get interested in those. But what we already know is that on average a cat that eats a renal care diet will live 3 times as long as a cat that doesn't. So that is very much the standard of care. We do have difficulties in that not all cats know this and not all cats will eat renal care diets.
But it's just a question of palatability, they just dislike it.
It is a question of palatability, and I think some of it depends on what the feeding ethos has been before you try and introduce these diets. So we've never studied it, but I think it would make a good student project. I'm sure that you could prove that if a cat has ever eaten a prawn, it will never eat a renal care diet. I'm sure there's an association there.
Oh, I see.
That's what we're up against in the clinics. But that would be our first and foremost recommendation. The other recommendations, which I think are uncontroversial, would be to monitor the cats for development of urinary tract infections. Because if a cat has a cystitis or a bacterial urinary tract infection in the bladder and has kidney disease, it can track up to the kidneys. And that probably isn't what starts the process off, but it can make a cat suddenly get a lot worse. And we know by looking at this population of cats, it's females particularly are at risk for developing urinary tract infections. And in fact, as many as 50% of female cats with chronic kidney disease, if you monitor them closely enough and follow them for long enough, will have a urinary tract infection at some point. And strangely, they don't actually very often show any clinical signs, even when they have an infection. So it's important to be proactive and to look for that. Another recommendation would be to monitor these cats' blood pressure and to identify the cats with hypertension. And the cats with hypertension should be treated with amlodipine, which is a calcium channel blocker. And that's very, very effective in terms of reducing the blood pressure.
And what about angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors? I think in the human field they seem to be renoprotective, protecting the kidney as well. Is there any evidence for that being the case in the veterinary field, especially in the cat?
The role of ACE inhibitors is very interesting, and that's where a lot of current veterinary research is focused. And certainly this ties into the finding that cats that are proteinuric will deteriorate, that their clinical condition deteriorates faster than the cats that are non-proteinuric. ACE inhibitors are potentially beneficial in reducing the amount of protein that the cats lose into their urine. What I wouldn't recommend is that a cat that is clearly hypertensive, that has retinal lesions or blood pressures that I think make it at risk for developing retinal lesions, shouldn't be treated with ACE inhibitors. Because although ACE inhibitors have antihypertensive effects, they generally don't reduce the blood pressure enough to make a difference. They don't reduce the blood pressure enough to save the cat's sight. So if the blood pressure is above 170, 180 millimetres of mercury, whatever cutoff you're comfortable with using in your clinic, those cats should be treated with amlodipine. But cats that are not hypertensive may benefit from treatment with an ACE inhibitor. And if you talk about it rationally, then the cats that are most likely to benefit from an ACE inhibitor are the ones that have the most protein in their urine, and also the ones with relatively mild kidney disease, because it's not been shown for certain in veterinary medicine, but at least in human medicine, you have to be going to survive for a reasonably long period of time to actually benefit from ACE inhibitors. In actual fact, if you are perched on the edge of a precipice with your kidney disease about to really precipitously decline, then an ACE inhibitor may well just push you over the edge.
And that's not really what we want
to do. And that's not what we want to do. So a lot of our work is directed at trying to recognise the cats that have kidney disease earlier in the course of the disease, which hopefully will then identify cats that are more likely to benefit from treatments like ACE inhibitors.
So it would sound as if, despite the fact that you made a lot of progress, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. So if there's students who want to work on prawns and renal failure or anything else, they should possibly get in touch with you, right?
Yes, we always have a lot of ongoing projects. Because all this data gets entered into a computerized database, there can be many different people, undergraduate veterinary students, other students at the Royal Veterinary College, PhD students, and myself and my colleagues, all looking at the data from these cats, all looking for different things, but all working towards the same end, which is trying to recognise these cats sooner and to be able to offer them more in the way of treatment.
Well, it would be great if we could help you with this endeavour to some extent by recruiting a couple of students, but first of all I have to thank you for joining us today and giving us so much information about the work that you've been doing recently. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it from us for this week. Thanks for listening in, and make sure you join us again in 2 weeks' time with a new episode of the RVC podcast. In the meantime, if you have any feedback or suggestions, please send them to podcast@rvc.ac.uk. Goodbye.